CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with CMB Ely. Live on Cliff Central.
Hello, Mzansi, this is Siyabonga Bile, live on Cliff Central, of course, for another installment of The Threaded Exchange. It's about being cultured, it's about being bold, it's about being progressive, and we here in Johannesburg, we are beaming into the world, and I'm very excited to be back, man. You know, last week you took an Easter break weekend, and I hope you're all refreshed, you're all excited, and you're amped to be back. As you know, every single week, I bring you a hot, spicy show where we talk everything creative, we talk everything business, and this show is about uplifting young African creators and opening their minds to dreaming bigger. One of the worst things that, you know, racism has done to this country was kill us mentally, whereas the black African child doesn't see or doesn't believe how far they can make it. And we're here about unlocking that thinking. We are here about raising the mental game in terms of you can do it. If you're sitting there listening to my show today, I'm telling you right now, you can change the world, you can follow your dreams, and you can be the best. And today, I've got the best in the game, visual director, photographer, all-round creative, and I could even say probably one of the most creative people I've ever worked with, and probably someone who really, top three people that inspire me in my career, and top three people that inspire me in life in general. I've got Ricardo Marcus Knipe. I don't know if I said that correctly. Did I say that correctly? I always mess up your name.
Look, my photography name really is Ricardo Marcus K. I've always given people a reason to use the K, because it's a silent K in my surname. Knipe is my surname, you did say correctly. But I've always given people a reason to say the K after school.
Yeah. You've been around for a very long time. Right now, people know you as a photographer. And they know you also as the visual director.
For the Threaded Man.
Soon to change to another title, because you do so much more than just
directing. Yeah, we're expanding.
We're expanding, yeah. But and people just always say to me that you've been around forever, you know.
Well, I mean,
just so tell me about that journey. How have you been around forever?
In a brief, Ricardo Marcus K has come across on many names over my career. I mean, I started as Marcus K. I started as Marcus. I went through this phase of just RMK or just Ricardo. I started early on when I was still in high school. I started doing club photography. It was a way for me to get into club when I was in high school, being underage. Someone gave me a camera and I just started. I mean, it started there. The love for kind of light and everything that is creating started with club and event photography. I moved into PR from that, and then dabbled in commercial stuff, editorial here and there, portrait works. I mean, I got an idea and a feel of all the fields in photography that will allowed me to kind of explore. And then I moved into editorial work after that. I did some commercial work, and now we're sitting where we are.
Yeah. But what do you think gave you that? I mean, each time I talk to you, you always tell me how, I think that's part of the reason why you and I work well together, is that you always tell me how there's so much more we can do. You know, that there's another boundary to break. Not a lot of people have that. You know, most of the time we see successful people and we always think they're just better than us or they're more talented than us.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's just a way of thinking to say, actually, I could do much better, and putting yourself in that mental space. How did you get that?
I mean, I came in the industry being one of those people that I want to change it. I came in wanting to change everything from the ground up. I wanted magazines to be different. I wanted the commercial industry to be different. So, I mean, I think a lot of that also comes from my own upbringing of having no limits in terms of what I was able to do. I mean, my parents allowed me and gave me opportunities to become anything. I mean, in high school, I was trying to become a pro golfer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's so many avenues that we can take, and I was just allowed to explore all of those things. So I know there's no limitation to anything. And especially when something I've come to learn in the creative industries, there's no limit. There is no limit to our boundaries, to anything in terms of creating and what we can create.
Yeah.
So I always knew that, and I always thought that there's nothing that stops us from becoming three things, and how those three things can kind of merge into one.
Yeah.
You can be a photographer and a director, and then you can own a company that does chairs. And you can use that space that you've already worked in to expand the furniture space that you're in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's no limit in terms of what you can see for yourself.
Amazing. I mean, you started photography at quite a young age. How old were you when you were like, okay, I'm going to consciously be a photographer?
I mean, photography was supposed to be my backup plan to golf. I was supposed to be a pro golfer and photography the backup plan that I had. And then I started it, I think I was about 16 when I first picked up a camera. And then when I turned 19, I just thought I need to put everything into this to make it something that could be a backup thing.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, going into the clubs, partying, and all of that just took away everything from golf. You can't be on the golf at 5 a.m. Golf course at 5 a.m. if you're in the club until 4 a.m.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it really took over in a space in my life, which was great. For me, it was an experience that I'd never regret. I still play golf. I still do all of those other things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, starting at an early age, I actually have a photo when I was 5 years old, me holding a camera, and it actually looked like an extension of my arm already. It felt natural in my hand.
Wow.
So I think it started a lot earlier than I thought it did, but it's been a progression from about 16.
Oh, wow. So I could say you've been in the industry for over 10 years now. You've been
I've been in the industry for 7 years. I've been shooting for 10. I've been in the industry for 7.
What's the difference?
I mean, you can shoot. If you look at, even our discussion today, if you look at social media and just taking photos with your phone, it's still, you are technically a mobile photographer. There's levels to everything, and there's levels to every career you do. So, I mean, you're entry level. So I always felt like I was shooting and taking photos, but I was never really a photographer.
Yeah.
Till my first kind of paycheck.
Yeah. Let's actually get into what, now that you've given us a cool background of who you are and what you do, let's talk about that now. You know, when you started photography, social media wasn't as big as it is. And I could even go as far as saying that you come not from an old era of photography, but you come from the last pre-years of social media, of photography. Definitely. And, you know, you might have said to enter the industry was probably much harder. You know, there was no Instagram to show your work off. You know, there was no social media to push your photography for. So the
I
way
could say it was a lot easier.
Was it a lot easier?
I
how
could
so?
Say it was a lot easier. I mean, in those times when you needed, okay, the internet was there, it was just kind of starting out, and it was in a stage where you had a blog where you could use spaces like Tumblr, where you could have your portfolio online. And it was also allowed for more people to see it, because it was a smaller space, if anything.
Yeah.
There was more people focused on those platforms and more people focused on seeing things in there. With social media, it's such an explosion of content that's happened that it's a lot harder to be seen and noticed now than it was then.
Yeah. Do you think then social media has sort of killed the photography game, in a sense that now, because there's this huge splurge of social media and of this huge splurge of content, the best photographers are not always on the forefront of using social media to showcase their work. So you get mobile photographers who now get used as photographers for campaigns. You know, what's your insight into that?
I mean, I feel like there's two parts to that narrative. So, I mean, there's the social media, the explosion, the mobile photography, everything that comes with that, and that has grown not only people's eye and understanding of photography, but the way people look at the world and the way people look at photography. I mean, social media and camera phones have grown so much in terms of the way people see the world and visualize the world. There's a photographer I used to follow from back in the day, Chase Jarvis. Well, he's still around, but he, when the iPhone like 4 came out back, when the camera was just developing and becoming great, he made a book called My Best Camera, or The Best Camera, the camera you always have with you, which is your phone. So, I mean, it's given platforms and opportunities to so many people and so many things, mobile photography. And at the same time, the technology has helped pro photographers shoot better on location. You can now shoot straight on an iPad or phone. So you have those opportunities where technology has grown that thing. And on the other side of that, I mean, it's tricky, because it now means that to become a great photographer, you need to step it up to a second level. You need to go beyond just being able to take photos and just being able to take great photos. You need to conceptualize things. You need to bring things into elements into the photograph. And I think it goes both ways in terms of, has it grown photography and the industry and the art, or has it destroyed it? I think in both parts, there's a little bit to do with each side.
Wow. Incredible, incredible. We're going to get into a very heated debate, because I really want to go into social media photography and your take on bloggers and photographers working with bloggers and all that kind of stuff. And also, photographers are now becoming influencers. Does that take away from the art of photography? Does that take away the hours from that, now that bloggers are now becoming, you know, on the forefront? And Mario Testino is quoted saying that it's cheap and it's a lack of talent for a photographer to become an influencer. Photographers should stick to doing big global campaigns and driving the narrative from behind the lens. But I would assume that Austin and Cedric would strongly disagree with that. So I want to hear your take on it, but we'll be right back right after this. Please do not be afraid to call us on 0861-555-189. You can WhatsApp us on 079-748-2090. You can also WhatsApp us at hashtag The Thread Exchange, also on Cliff Central. We'll be checking you right after this.
My girl been through so much, that's my partner in crime. Touch any of the above, now you harder to find.
We back at it on The Threaded Exchange, and I'm live with Ricardo Marcus Snipe, who is telling us about his journey into photography. Also, we're going to get into an interesting debate about I see you, not as a, you know, when I look at Cedric and Austin, they more, not necessarily social media photographers, but they've come into the scene during this social media influencer era, and their platform has been working with photographers, whereas for you it's very different. I feel like your background is more traditional photography, more shooting campaigns, magazine editorials, shooting events, and so your entry into the industry is completely different. And now for me, the debate gets into when you are seeing the social media influencers. For now, people are becoming photographers because of Instagram, because of Twitter, and now people can edit, there's Visco Cam and all this shit of content that's basically happening. What do you think, or what did you think at the time seeing this happen, and how did you see your role changing within the industry?
I mean, I also came in when it was I wasn't kind of thrown into social media because it's something that came for me afterwards.
Yeah.
I agree with that to an extent, with that Mario Ticino quote. I do believe that there are parts of photography and parts of what we do that get underplayed on social media and underplayed on everything like that. Some of the best photographers in the world have 100 followers on Instagram.
Yes.
Because that's not their focus. That's not what they're trying to drive. With social media guys and everybody who's... I applaud them because it's a lot of work. Social media is to keep up the content, to keep up the conversation. It's a lot of work and a lot of maintenance in terms of social media. So, yeah. I mean, that's still a way that I see those guys creating a career for themselves. With the other side of that, I mean, becoming a photographer and being a photographer without social media is still something you can achieve. With the new age of social media and Instagram and having followers and bloggers, and I think it's created more opportunities within the space of photography. It's creating different opportunities that were never there before. But at the same time, it does dilute photography as a whole, as an industry, a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, it grows at a certain point. For me, and something I also learned recently is that especially with big commercial clients now, it's not always about only the work. It's about your influence that you can bring to the product or to the brand, which social media has driven.
Yeah.
So, I mean, influencers in social media and bloggers, and they're using that influence that they've built to create a career as well that builds and that brand of themselves.
But as a photographer, I honestly think it's not your job to be an influencer. You're shooting the influencer.
But you're an influencer more than you're a photographer when you're in that space.
Yeah, which I think is a bit problematic. I mean, because for me, if Mario Testino, even Nick Knight, doesn't have social media really. He doesn't actually showcase his work, but he's one of the top photographers in the world. And he has shot people like Travis Scott, incredible work. And now I have a cool campaign that I'm shooting, and I'm deciding between Nick Knight and Ricardo the influencer. Are you now telling me I should go for Ricardo the influencer instead of the real photographer?
I'm always going to say go for the real photographer.
That's my thing.
Yeah, I'm always going to say that. But at the same time, I think brands think about how far their reach can get.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the having that influence that someone else brings, it helps brands, but doesn't necessarily help the work that you're creating. I mean, the guys are still creating great work. Mobile Media Mob are still creating amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And they're using that basis and that influence to add benefit and add kind of extra for clients to have within that space.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's also on a scale of who you're shooting for. Are you shooting for Coca-Cola? Are you big brands? Or are you shooting for bloggers? Are you shooting for smaller brands that want that influence, that client? Are they using that space in social media to gain ground? Or are they putting out a big single campaign that's going to run for 12 months?
I also think, you know, it's something that I've realized and discovered in my career, is that one of the first things that I think I knew from a young age and being conscious of being on social media is that, like, it's easy to be big on social media. You know,
what are you big for on social media?
That's the thing. So I feel that, you know, like, for example, I get criticized, you know, that how did I start off as a blogger and now I have a radio show and I have all these other avenues of things that I'm doing. And people fail to understand that everything that I do actually stems from a vision. And that's my vision for The Threaded Man, and that is about building platforms for young black African creators. And my show is a platform. I'm not by any means trying to be a radio jockey. My work on Instagram, same thing. The Threaded Man, same thing. For me, everything I do is driven by a specific purpose. But then in the industry, you do find a lot of people who are not necessarily driven by that purpose, where they just do whatever gig they can get their hands on that makes them famous. And you find that there are people who shoot on their phones and use VSCOcam, but then they get praised as photographers, and then they end up getting campaigns as photographers. And that's where, for me, it's like,
Yeah, I mean, the line gets a bit tricky. For a lot of photographers that have been in the industry for a while, it's like, I've worked all of this time, because it's a long game. I mean, Photography is definitely a long shot game. It's not going to be 10 years. It's going to be 20 to 30 years. Some of the best photographers in the world are in their late 30s and 40s now, and started when they were in their early 20s.
Yeah.
But some of the social media guys that are coming up are a lot younger, because they're gaining ground with an audience. And I think it's all about the audience.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are all platforms, but it's about using those platforms. The older guys that have been in the industry for 30 years, 20, 30 years, don't need those platforms. But I think it plays on both sides, that you, as a younger photographer, don't focus on it, but it's something that you need, especially in this age. It is social media, and it's something that you have to use, and you have to kind of take advantage of now, because it's also going to change. Our social media patterns and everything are going to change in the next couple of years.
Yeah.
So we don't know what's going to happen with the space, but we know that it's going to always be something that we're going to use and need to use now, especially.
Yeah, definitely. And also, do you think, you know, also, you and I collaborated on the Threaded Year. Guys, the new Threaded Year is going to come out pretty soon. Don't stress.
Yeah, we're getting there.
We're getting there. But you and I, I remember, like, hitting you up last year and being like, yo, dude, like, I'm fucking tired of seeing the same shit. No offense to all the photos on Instagram, but most of them are doing the same shit. You know, everybody's doing street style. Everybody's editing the same. Everyone is it's looking like a giant hype beast, hype snobite. All those images, everything just seems so fucking the same. You know, we haven't, and I miss that era of photography where, you know, you're looking at a Vogue magazine or you're looking at GQ and you're looking at pictures that are so iconic they could be hanged as art in your house. And I look at most of these photos on Instagram and I think, no, this is cool, great content, but I don't look at it and be like, this is art, this is something I want to put up in my living room one day. You know, we used to have photographers like that, like old school pictures of Tupac, old school pictures of Madonna.
See, but it's things you can only find once.
I feel like we are actually missing those moments. I feel like people are just creating, even bloggers, you know, people are now just dressing well for the grams. Their style is influenced by the grams. Yeah. Photography is influenced by the grams. Everyone's shooting for the grams. Everyone seems to be doing everything creative for the grams. And a lot of real stuff is being missed in that, you know?
I mean, even exhibitions, like you say, all those things that happen in a moment and you're not going to ever get back. Social media is about creating things for now and then it disappears in a few seconds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in creating those things for now, exhibitions, I don't see as many photography exhibitions as I used to. The guys, they're falling into this kind of cycle.
It's about the likes, bro.
It's about
3,000 likes and that's it. It's not about
long-lasting effects and long-lasting kind of imprints on people.
Yeah. And also for me, the other craziest thing that I look at is that, I mean, I'm not going to mention any names and I'm going to be quoted for throwing shade. I'm not throwing shade. This is a real discussion. Yeah. Is that I even look at, actually, I look at the whole creative industry in general. So I look at the bloggers. Cool. Bloggers are having numbers now. Bloggers are hitting 20,000, 40,000, 80,000. Some are even hitting 100,000. Shout out to Aisha and Sarah Langer, who are hitting 100,000. So bloggers are really becoming celebrities, in a sense, creating huge followership, getting verified on Twitter. All those things are happening, right? And I look at the bloggers' content. It's still that street style stuff, still collaborating with clothing brands, as per normal. I look at photographers like Cedric are doing really, really well. Yourself, you guys are shooting street style, you guys are shooting events, you guys are doing campaigns, some are even being influencers in campaigns. Then I look at stylists, styling celebrities. I look at the whole creative industry and it's more or less sort of, I wouldn't say the same, but more or less people are doing the same things in a different sort of stature, on a different
within setting. Their own sort of style, but the same kind of
but thing. But the same thing.
Yeah.
And my question is, where is the industry going? There will come a time, because I believe I'm already tired. I'm actually tired. I'm tired of how long are influencers and photographers work with these brands? Are we going to keep shooting events forever? Are we going to keep doing outfit posts forever? Like, where are we going as an industry? You know, are photographers only going to be used as influencers? For me, I look at a lot of guys, and I look at guys like Trevor, and I'm like, I need a book from you. you know, about your photography. I need a book. I want to see you shoot magazine covers. You mean, I've seen you as an influencer. I've seen you work for forefront of brands. But I want to see you start building your business.
Your,
you know what I'm saying?
As a photographer.
Because I feel all of us in the creative industry, we're becoming too dependent on brands. We're like, yeah, this brand hasn't used me for this, or this brand is using the wrong influencers, or Woolworths should have more black influencers, whatever. But at the end of the day, these brands owe us jack shit. We are the business. And so right now I'm looking at, you know, I think that's why my company has been able to grow so well, because I have a team that wants to build a business. And so that's what forced me into looking at radio, forced me to looking at fashion shows and all these different types of things. But I look at all my other counterparts, creatives, who I want to see do well. I want to see my counterparts doing well, but I'm afraid that they're not owning enough of their work, because most of their work is for collaborations with brands, but they're not building anything that's original to them, or they're not building any
infrastructure. Creative spaces.
Yeah, and what happens if brands decide not to work with influencers anymore? The half of them, 90% of the industry would go broke, because no one has built infrastructures to survive without the brands. It feels like the industry is becoming too brand dependent.
Well, that definitely. I mean, I think social media has driven that in a big way, because it's about, you know, you're coming to them as your own brand, but at the same time, as an influencer, you're coming to them with numbers. Here's a group of people that follow me that I have a connection with, and you're using that influence of theirs. Instead of us building businesses and building brands that other brands not only want to collaborate with, but want to work for us, we want to use them to drive our own agendas and our own brands. So I think that's a big part, that it's about building the business. It's about coming back to it, and it not only being, because it's about money. At the end of the day, it comes down to money. It comes down to, you're doing these things because you can get paid from doing these things.
Yeah.
You're not only, and that's how brands use us. That brands are the ones who have the money, and brands are the ones who are coming to the influencers and being like, I'm going to pay you so much and you're going to do this work for me.
Yeah.
Instead of building a business where those are your clients and not brands that are paying you.
Yeah.
Those are your business partners.
And even at that, I mean, I also look at a lot of international influencers. One of the top influencers probably in the world is Cristiano Ronaldo. And I've seen his transition from seen as this Nike face, Nike sports guy, CR7 shoes, and now he's built his own brand, CR7.
Yeah.
Where he's realizing that it's cool to get millions and hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars or whatever a month they're paying him from Nike, but he found it that it's important that if Nike had to drop me, I have my own brand.
Yeah,
and owning my brand. And even Michael Jordan, he owns the Jordan brand with Nike, you know. And a lot of young South Africans are doing such incredible work, but they're not actually going and owning their work.
Yeah, creating your own things,
which is a scary thing. So recently I went to Rwanda, Kigali. I'm not going to dive so much into my trip, because some of the things that happened I'm not allowed to say on radio. But while I was there, I also got a chance to see the country. It's during the Genocide Month, commemorating 23 years since genocide. And going there, I mean, I wasn't scared that anything was going to happen, but I mean, I was very conscious of what the country had been through, and I was so anxious to see, you know, how are the people, how are they rebuilding this country. And wow, what an incredible country. I had a life-changing trip. I met up with local designers, local entrepreneurs, and it really shifted something in me. I had a really, really tough epiphany, because one of the things that I got to do, I also got to meet with other Americans who were there from big firms like JPMorgan Chase. The UN has a lot of reach in that side as well. So, and there's a lot of internationals, and I was just engaging with them in terms of business and speaking about them in terms of business and what's happening in Africa, where Africa is going. And one of the things that I realized is that as Africans, you know, before I went to Rwanda or even like Ethiopia or Sudan, you read in the fucking news how these countries are in wars, how things are shit, how things are underdeveloped. And I went there and these countries and
it's
Rwanda,
not like that.
It's not like that. It's a fucking lie. And
it's
one of
the
things,
the broadcast
that's happening. I'm going to go on a fucking rant right now. And then we're going to get into a discussion about what I'm talking about, is that as Africans, one of the toughest things that we have to realize, and one of the realest things that we have to realize, is that we have become brainwashed to believe that Western and European platforms are much better than us. Because the white person, when the white person colonized Africa, and when apartheid happened, more than us, you know, being abused in terms of the law and all these other things, but it killed us mentally. Because when we think the best, we think Ivy League. Ivy League is what? American. When we think the best in whatever, we think America or Europe. Best designers, they're European or American. We never say best designer. Ooh, African. And because we are living up to the Western standard of excellence and the Western standard of how to do things at a top level, we have become, we have sort of gotten to a space where we justify our excellence using those platforms.
Yeah.
And what I discovered, that this is all fucking branding. Ivy League universities are not actually the best universities in the world. They tell us that they're best universities in the world. Prime example is this. You get two big financial law firms, Goldman Sachs, everyone knows what Goldman Sachs is. You get JP Morgan Chase. Part of those brands' two slogans is that they are the best financial company in the world. Each of them say that. But no one asks why. Right? When I say to you, The Threaded Man is the best fashion and lifestyle portal in the world,
people question it. Yeah.
You know, people question it. They say why. But no one will question a Western or European company. But then I asked those questions recently. I was like, okay, what makes JP Morgan Chase the best financial company in the world? Then I realized they're basing it off their assets. They're saying that they have the most assets. Or
numbers on paper, what they can show.
The numbers. Yeah. Then Goldman Sachs says that they're the best financial company in the world because of the amount of profit that their shareholders get. But why can't an African child build a financial firm that funds young entrepreneurs? And they too can say, we are the best financial company in the world. Why? Because we fund the future of Africa. So do you realize that the excellence that you seek is driven by your purpose? Not driven by the Western standard. And
but
as
like
Africa,
you say, going back in that whole, and going back, this is in terms of the brainwash, going back all the way. I mean, we think about it in such a great thing. If you think about colonization, it's everything that's given to us. All these platforms, all these things that we think are really great are things that were given to us to be like, yeah, this is the best.
Yeah.
It was given to us to say, look, here's the best.
Yeah.
And there was money backing it. And it's a struggle within Africa because as much as we need to come to terms that we can create the best things for us and we can create the best things globally that stem from Africa.
Yeah.
There's still a backing, financial backing that a global market and Europe and America still kind of control in terms of how far you can push that limit.
Yeah.
And the guys who are making bucket loads of money in Africa are not keeping it and growing Africa. They have offshore accounts. If all the mining companies that mine in Africa kept their money in Africa and through Africa, there'd be no hunger in Africa anymore.
Yeah.
All their money is offshore. All their money is filtering through other countries. So, I mean, all of those things also add up to the struggle that Africa has in terms of creating our own businesses and our own content and all of those things. I mean, it's multiple kind of elements that add up, but it still comes back to we need to take that stand and we need to be able to say, I'm going to build a firm, I'm going to open this firm and I'm going to make it the best in the world.
Yeah, I think most importantly for me is that as Africans, most of the time, especially as black Africans, even black South Africans, and I think this is something very serious as young people, we spend so much time pointing out how racist white people are. We spend so much time saying, this white person needs to change. You know, white-owned companies need to have more black people. We keep saying white people need to do this and need to do that and need to change this and they need to be like this. But we actually forget that it can actually start with us. There's a famous Rumi quote where it says, I was clever, so I wanted to change the world, but then I became wiser and I wanted to change myself. And in changing yourself as African creatives is instead of saying, oh, House of Teyo needs to be on Vogue, it's about how do we build an African Vogue ourselves. I hear this talk all the time about how Vogue should now bring a Vogue Africa. I'm like, fuck that. We should build our own publication that's going to be better than Vogue, and we don't need Vogue to tell us that it's good.
I mean,
do you get what I'm saying?
We need to start building
our own platforms.
I know that when you're using established platforms, I mean, Vogue has that space where they have that name and they have that reputation that is Vogue. And bringing an African Vogue steps in a certain way gives Africa a platform that's already established.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, if you're starting something that you want to create your own Vogue, it takes time. Vogue's been around for more than a century.
Yeah.
I have a book that's 100 years of Vogue.
It's now 125 now.
So, I mean, you see how long that takes for that thing. And, I mean, there's some countries that are still kind of coming out of certain places in Africa.
Yeah.
As South Africa ourselves, we're still also struggling to find our place in the world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's hard to – we want that, and I know we need that, but it's also something that's going to take a long time. And I think people – and with social media and everything, going back to that, it's that now thing.
It's that quick gratification.
People want it now.
But I think we should build it. You know, definitely. And I'm think, totally, you know, is that I mean, of course, I realize that like Vogue magazine has got the establishment, it's got the money, it's got the industry in its hand, but that's
it's
not
up to us to create that.
But
yeah,
for me, the vision I have for Threaded Man is that I want to build it into bigger than Vogue in Africa, you know, because for me, it's about owning our content. It's about owning our narrative. And when you have a Vogue magazine coming into Africa, or you have an international brand giving us a platform, it's great. We've got a platform.
But that stays still in Europe.
That stays in Europe. Yeah. The money goes to Europe. The narrative is still controlled by Europeans, and we never really own that content.
Yeah. Something so, created by us.
Yeah. And as Africans, I mean, also, someone had to sit and be like, oh, let me start Vogue. Someone actually sat and started Vogue from scratch with no money. Do you get what I'm saying? We can't look at these big firms and say, oh, they're so big, it must be so hard. When you sit down and you think about it, everything in the world started as a simple idea that
putting
had
in the
no
time,
money.
Putting in the effort.
Yeah. Putting in the time and putting in an effort. And I remember I was sitting in Kigali with the guys from JP Morgan from Wall Street, and I'm talking to them about these American companies and the culture of Wall Street. And these guys were like, dude, everything that you see in the world is about branding. You know, these companies are actually not the best. The people in these companies are actually not the best. We sit and we see these billionaires. We sit and we see all these billionaires and we think, oh my God, they're probably the most intelligent people in the world. We think they've got the answers to everything. But these guys are like, actually, dude, trust me, you as CIBile are better than 30% or even 50% of these billionaires that we meet. And so that goes back to that whole African thing, is that when we see someone have more money than us or is in Wall Street, that is seen as the most influential market in the world, we already think that we are not that best, you know. Yeah. For example, I made a stupid example of something that I had said when I was in varsity. Listen, I'm going to drop out of varsity, I'm going to build this company called Threaded Man, and it's going to change Africa. And someone laughed at me and was like, oh my God, you think dropping out is a good idea? I'm like, yeah, look at Mark Zuckerberg. And they were like, Sia, the difference between you and Mark is that Mark Zuckerberg went to an Ivy League. Because immediately they made me feel
like you were,
that I was not good enough because I didn't go to an Ivy League. And I think that's the battle of the African child. You know, you sitting in the office, you know, you get told, hey, Ricardo, this is so-and-so. They went to Oxford or Harvard. Immediately the mood changes. You see them better than you.
Yeah.
You don't think that actually that's just a title that they carry, that they went to Harvard. Doesn't mean they're better. It's just an actual person, and that you are also capable of performing at the same level, even
definitely,
not better.
Yeah, I mean, there's people that have, like yourself, dropped out of school and done amazing things and are intellectually and brilliant and have never studied. I mean, Einstein was dyslexic at a stage.
Yeah.
Stories, before he passed. but, I mean, those things, and they are, they're titles, and those things who they give you elevation, they open you up to certain spaces. I mean, anybody who's a trust fund kid or went to Oxford or went to Harvard or UCT, I mean, you already have a space that's open up for you. That's there. When you don't have those things, you have to work a lot harder to acquire that space, which is the tricky thing. I mean, maybe that's why people see it as you a little bit lesser, because you start a lot further back.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you're less in terms of
anything
else.
Which makes you better, because you face so many challenges.
You're starting the race a little bit further back. They got a head start on you. But you can still achieve the same thing that they're achieving, and better, but it just means you have to work a little harder to catch up that ground.
Yeah. No, definitely. I also feel the same way,
And I feel the same way. People also look at, not only if someone has more money than you, and they look at that, it's if you look at social media and people are like, oh, they have 300,000 followers. What are they doing? They're better than me. What? There's something that they're doing that I'm not doing. So I mean, even in that space, it's people are still looking at like this. They have more than I have. They have.
And
a better,
if you think about it, who set up the standard? The West and the Europeans. Because from Instagram, all these social companies that we use that tell us who's better, you know, and who's not better. It's all based on Westernized systems. You know, the Billboard 100, for example, is a Western. So when an African like Black Coffee is on that list, we're like, oh my God, he's finally made it.
Yeah, that's
where I feel like Black Coffee has made it before.
Long ago, Black Coffee was
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like there's certain musicians we'll never see, and they will never see Gom music on Billboard 100. Yeah. But it doesn't mean it's not world best. It doesn't mean that it's not good. But we're using all these Western titles to say someone has made it. You know what I'm saying? And I mean, I'm not saying Western standards are not better or not good. It's just that we need to recognize that, yes, the West has got these huge platforms that have the numbers, that have world influence. Yeah. But that doesn't mean that we can't build our own.
And doesn't mean we don't have it already.
And we need some of us to be brave enough to build their own. You know, like, I look at, for example, the comedy industry. I look at Trevor Noah. He's on The Daily Show. What an incredible platform. He's on Time Magazine. He's everywhere.
But then you look at the Goliaths.
You look at the Goliaths who've built a platform.
They've built everything that's their own. Yeah.
Exactly. They built the Goliath Comedy Club. They're now on Destiny, on the Destiny cover, where for them, it's not about going to be these on these platforms and being owned by Americans. But for them, I'm not saying Trevor's owned by Americans, by the way. I'm just saying is that they took a different take on it. They were like, you know what? Let's actually build the African comedy scene.
Yeah.
You know, they built the Galat Comedy Club. They have a show now. They're on Comedy Central. So they're doing quite incredible number of work.
Finding the opportunities that you can take it.
Yeah, and building the platform. And I think that's the thing about Africans is that if you're an African right now, and you are in varsity, university, whatever it is that you're doing, I challenge you to not just go out and seek another job for another company. Build a platform. I think Africans are brilliant. You are a genius. I think that you can make it. I think that you are clever. There's nothing stopping you from building your own. And I know the fear is there that you have to compete with all these big companies. You have to compete with all these big personalities and whatnot. But build. I'm telling you, build. Building is so important. I look at our company. I mean, the Threaded Man right now is 5 years old, and that's the fears that I face every single day. You know how we are, Ricardo. We have bigger agencies trying to take us down. We've got agencies that don't want to pay us for 2 months. There's all these things that try to destroy what we do, but because of the purpose and because we love what we do, we prevail, you know? And
the underlining drive that just keeps you going.
And the world just doesn't want to see the African child progress, you know? And we just have to fight through that. But Ricardo, what's next for you? What is next? What is the next frontier for you? Or let me ask you this. Where do you think photography is going? I think now...
Look, I'll answer that in two parts.
Yeah.
And I think photography is on the up and up. I think it's always been. There's a new space with technology and social media that has it growing in a certain direction. I still think that the old ways need to be brought back in terms of shooting for print in a way that you're shooting for an image that's going to last forever. You're shooting once. You're not shooting multiple to have a variety. You're shooting a great image and a single great image that's going to kind of impact millions of people. So I think photography is definitely growing in two parts. It's growing in terms of what we see digitally, in terms of manipulation, in terms of moving things. I mean, you've seen these new photo flex kind of things happening on social media where single still image but something's moving. I mean those elements are growing photography in a certain direction in terms of, I mean, we're going to have holographic stuff in the future and, you know, stuff like that where photography and visual elements are still going to play a role. But at the same time, I think photography on a base level needs to still be stepped up. There's still space for education within photography. There's still space for new ideas to grow within photography. And there's so much that's happened in the space of photography that people always finger like, and it's a thing that happens often, that nothing is new.
Yeah.
Everything's always, it's been done. If you think about it, it's been done.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that. I feel like there's still things that to happen and to be done that have never happened before.
Yeah.
So I feel like there's a lot of space in photography to grow on a social level, on a digital level, on a technology level, and impacting the world. I think it's still a great space for people to impact the world.
Yeah, definitely. That's amazing. Wow. And is photography a viable business in South Africa? Is it possible to form a company and be a photographer?
It is. I think the trickiest part we face in South Africa is copyright laws. So we're one of three countries in the world that when a client pays you, they own the photos. In every other country in the world besides, I think it's us and Namibia, I forget the third one, but if all the other countries, a photographer always owns their work. They get paid royalties on everything that they use, everything
example, if you shot a campaign for The Threaded Man, even though we have paid you, you'd still own the usage of that image.
In another country,
yeah. If you're in America, for example.
In SA, if you paid me for those are yours.
So Mario Testino owns all these magazine covers.
Basically, he owns all the rights to these images.
So what?
Because you can sell, the thing is, you can sell those rights in the States, and you obviously they pay more if you're selling the rights to, and then they can use it
for them to own.
But initially, you own those rights. In South Africa, there's none of that. There's none of that discussion in terms of, I'm selling you rights. It's you paying me for a job, and then those images are yours.
Wow.
So it's tricky in that space, and there's guys fighting that battle for us. But everybody needs to get involved with that. Everybody also needs to keep on people that are using their images for things that they didn't sign up for. They gave you something and they gave you an image, but you're using it for other elements.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's something that it's hard to police within the country. So in terms of photography without that, I still think there's a lot of space to grow. I'm currently with an agency that's pro-melanin, so within the advertising industry, which is a big thing. I mean, a lot of the guys in the advertising industry are still white guys that are kind of owning the space within photography and directing and videography, cinematography, sorry. So, I mean, it's nice to see that happening as well. So I think that's a big element in it, to see the growth in photography within African people. It's just having platforms and having agents and having things that grow it in a space that it allows it to bloom. I mean, there's so much money in photography right now. There's a lot of money and spaces to be...
But as you said, that money is being eaten by white people. but also... Where do you see also local photographers going international? Do you think we'll have our own Mario Testinos that shoot for Vogue and those platforms?
I mean, I do. However, they all stay in the States. They all stay in London. They all stay in New York. I mean, there's a lot of photographers from SA that have moved over to kind of to allow to get that space. Yeah. Because here, I mean, the biggest career you can have is in advertising and commercial space. I mean, you get paid the most. You're getting the most, doing the most creative work within that space. Yeah. Our magazine industry... Here is nothing like it is in the States.
Yeah.
Completely. If they spend as much money as they do in commercial spaces, in the editorial space, we would have the most amazing editorials because we have the content. We have everything is here for us to use already. We're just not being given the budgets or anything to create those things within our space.
And I can even say on our end, I mean, with the Threaded Man, I mean, we've done groundbreaking work so far. But you know that we want to always push it to be better. Yeah, and people don't understand, the consumers, is that, guys... People don't want to give us budget. Like, brands don't want to spend budget on creating good work. They want to pay us cheap for more.
Yeah.
And sometimes...
It's about more, not about the time.
Yeah, and recently we started working on a project called... I'm not going to mention the name of the project, but we wanted to grow across Africa, showcasing these countries in such a beautiful way and creating the best content. And we charged... You know, part of our fee was charging, mostly because we want to take drones there and, like, hire all this equipment there. And literally the brand was like, no... we want to pay you half the price, but we want the same vision. And we're like, you don't understand. You're thinking we're pocketing all this money, but
production
actually, it's production, and they just don't want to pay for that quality of work. And then again, the consumers turn around and be like, what shit quality is this? And we're like, we are tier wanting to do the best. It's just that the brands don't think the market is good enough to spend that amount of money. Yeah. You know?
When you look at editorial teams in the States, Annie and Mario and all of them, like,
they $1 million a shoot. Can you imagine?
You know, for a cover. You know, you have this big budget to put a cover and a editorial piece together, and then you hear and you're like, people want to shoot advertising campaigns and they won't even spend 100. So, you know.
Yeah, they want to use 50K.
Yeah.
And 50K is not a lot of money for the campaign.
Well, it's just 2K. I mean, we're also in a space where it's hard to get those budgets because those budgets aren't always available.
Yeah, which is true.
So, I mean, it's up to us to also think creatively within that space and find solutions for things that we want to create. And it's about that, I think, more than anything in Africa, because we don't have that space. As much as we can complain about it and we want those things and we want to have budgets to do this and that, we don't have it right now. So we need to kind of think creatively within that space. And how can I achieve that? Or my own vision with what I've got.
Yeah. And I also think in general, you know, just returning from Rwanda, is that we've got, as creatives as well, we tend to just sit, especially as African creatives, we tend to just get caught up in our own countries. And we can collaborate with other Africans, you know, to make our content more interesting, to make it more creative. I mean, I was in Kigali, the locations are beautiful. We could literally leave South Africa and go there and shoot a campaign. We don't need a visa to go there. You get a visa on arrival. The currency is cheap. You can literally do anything. So there's also those barriers, I think, as Africans that we need to cross, is that actually we need to work more together and explore each other's countries and cultures, explore the continent, because that will then give our work more depth, give our work more meaning, and also just resonate across Africa, I think.
And that's the thing, building the platform. If you look at America, it's this huge space that everybody's working together.
Yeah.
Africa is a bigger space. Why is it not everybody? And it's hard. I mean, it's Africa, and we all know all the things that are happening across the continent. So it's hard for everything to come together, especially if that unity is not happening in a single country.
Exactly.
So, I mean, and it's up to us as creatives and photographers and cinematographers and directors to go beyond that space as business owners to find avenues within Africa that we can grow.
Definitely. Cool. In closing, I always tell my guests when they come on the show that they have to give a word of motivation. It's a Monday. So what words do you have for young photographers who are either studying or in high school, they want to pursue this thing as a career, they're feeling uninspired? Ricardo Marcus Snipe, how can you inspire them?
Motivational Monday. Don't confine yourself. Don't ever confine yourself. If you think that there's something that you want to do, but there's so many limitations to how you can do it. Don't ever confine that thinking. Always find a solution. If as a creative, you're a problem solver. You're finding solutions to problems that are there. And I mean, we're creatives in all spaces, but don't ever confine yourself to a limitation. And I say this in two ways, because I know that as creatives, we have no limits, and we shouldn't have limits to be creative. But we need to have boundaries in order to funnel that creativity in a certain space. So, yeah. I mean, your limitations need to be set. You need to set your own boundaries in terms of where you want to deliver your creative message and how you want to deliver it and what means you're going to use to deliver it. But in terms of that thinking, don't ever confine the thinking to, I'm a photographer and I can only shoot this because I can only get to that.
Yeah.
Create it yourself. Like you said from the beginning, it's if you want something, create it yourself and make it yourself and make it your own. And that's a part of that whole thing, and making it your own and not confining yourself.
Yeah, and I think my motivation, adding on top of that, is that you can do it. You can actually, guys, I know this sounds like a cliche, and I know a lot of people, yes, you can do it, yes, you can change the world, but I'm actually telling you right now, you can change the world. And stop complicating that you don't have enough money or you don't have enough resources to do what you want to do. And chances,
do it right now.
Chances are you'll never get the resources while you're sitting down and waiting for them. You are the resource. You are the light. We keep saying to people there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And we forget that actually
the
light is within inside you. You are that light. You can change the world. And you can change the world by doing what you love and being true to yourself. And to do that, you don't need money, because there are tons of people with millions of money who don't have a purpose. And they're actually so depressed. You don't need money to be happy. You don't need money to do your purpose. Follow your purpose. Start somewhere. You don't have the best camera. Start with the camera that's on your phone. You don't have the best website. Use WordPress. You don't have access to internet. Go find a cafe, you know. There's a lot of things that we do not have. And unfortunately, the world doesn't care. No one cares about your dreams. No one cares about what you need. It needs to start with you. You must care about what you need, and you must fight for what you need. And what you need is to be your true, authentic self. And trust me, no amount of money, no amount of value can ever be placed on that. Because once you start to change yourself, and once you start to believe in yourself, that's when you start to change the world around you. This is the Thread Exchange. I'm Siyabonga Bile. Ricardo Marcus Knight, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime, yeah.
And today, I'm gonna end the podcast with a nice song called Bounce Back, and I think it's about time that Africa bounces back. Last night took a L, but tonight I bounce back. Cliffcentral.com.